Hi guys, welcome to a new episode of our podcast. Today we are finishing up on the yamas as well. So we have our last yama, which is aparigraha, which is non-attachment, I believe. And as I think we've kind of gotten you guys used to, we'll have Monica talk more about that because I am not an expert in these kind of things. So I'm learning as she's talking as well.
Nobody's an expert. We learn as we go, as much as our curiosity and interest allows. So aparigraha helps us realize that by non-attaching to something, or that by non-grasping fiercely onto something, we can live happily in the constant change that is our life. So aparigraha translates as non-greed or non-possessiveness or non-attachment. So the word graha means to seize, to grasp, to take, to grab. And pari means on all sides, everywhere. And this prefix a is non, right? So it negates the word itself. So it's basically, it means non. So this very important yama teaches us that, we should take only what we need and keep only what serves us in this present moment, and to let go when the time is right. So when I think of physical possessions, Alex, probably you have something to add to this. For me, this is very important because I'm really proud that in the past years I have been trying to live in a more minimalistic way, and really donate or re-gift or simply toss away the things, the possessions, the material possessions that no longer serve me, that I no longer need or see a use for. So if we look into our wardrobe, into our cupboards, into our drawers, probably the wise question that we must ask ourselves is, do we really need everything that we have? Do we really use everything that we have? And most likely the answer is no, we don't use all of these things. And I was fascinated by the method of this person called Marie Kondo. Yeah, you know her, Alex, of course you do. A lot of us know her method. So it's about losing the things that no longer are of use to us, and tossing away or donating or getting rid of the things that no longer bring us joy. So I am not, I don't have an intimate knowledge of the method, but the point is to periodically, constantly, consistently evaluate your wardrobe and your possessions, everything that lies around your house unused, and make a decision on the things that you will keep, that you will keep on using, as opposed to the things that you must get rid of. And there are a lot of ways through which you can get rid of things, no? It's donating them to charity, or recycling them, repurposing them, giving them away, gifting them or re-gifting them, or simply, just throwing them away in the garbage. So do you have a method? How do you go about this?
Well, first off, I do know about Marie Kondo, and I, read about that a few years back. I am like you in that regard, that I am trying to live a more minimalistic sort of lifestyle. I feel like that, I think maybe we've touched upon this in a previous episode, but I feel like that helps you save, energy, time, resources, right? Because all the possessions require all these things, space, and mental space as well for you to like kind of figure out what you're doing, and maybe there is too much clutter and that clogs your mind as well. So I did actually apply the Marie Kondo
Yeah.
method, a while back. I can't remember when it was, like quite a few years back. And the idea is, to your point, to get rid of things that don't spark joy anymore. And she kind of preached the just take every little thing, so to speak, look at it, kind of assess, does it spark joy, does it not? If it doesn't, then donate or find a way in a good way, if you can, to get rid of it. And I've done that, and I think for the most part it has been good, because it did help with kind of realizing what things, I want to keep versus what I don't need or are not okay. However, I feel like after doing it, I did have a few moments that I was like, oh, I wish I couldn't remember if I still had that thing or X or Y. And then I was like, oh, I probably don't. And I was like, oh, I should have kept that.
Maybe.
Because now I would have worn that or whatever. So I feel, and again, I feel like I've said this in a previous episode, you have to be aware of or aware, you have to kind of find the balance, it's a better way to put it, between just not going from one extreme to the other. So if you've never tried minimalism, maybe don't try to throw away your whole life out the door the first time around.
It'd be a huge change, right?
Correct. But then also, because you don't have experience, let's say, right, in that area, as with anything else, you might, just fall on the other extreme. And then, whilst that was fine, and I didn't, I didn't die because I didn't have those things anymore, obviously. But for sure, there were moments where I was like, why did I do that? I shouldn't have. And that could get to even more extremes. I didn't, but you could potentially, I would assume, like if you throw away three quarters of your possessions or whatever it is, right, in one go,
A lot.
or in one period of time.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that the more we hoard, the more the more hoarders we are, the more possessions we hoard, the more we weigh ourselves down. I think with not only physical but also energetic baggage. And the more we become attached to things, the more we worry about losing, these possessions. So that's a lot. That's a huge burden in terms of energy. No, if you have a credit from a bank, it's actually a huge burden. And everyone's seeing that, and I can tell this from my own experience. The lesser possessions, the less possessions you own, the freer you are. So of course this is ideally speaking, but real life is not always, how to put it, it's not always looking this clear. No. So but as a matter of fact, the more we chase after acquiring commodities, the more we distance ourselves from peace and for happiness, because then stress takes over, and of course, this type of stress is stealing our energy, our time. So the problem is not necessarily in the material possessions themselves, but rather and the fact that we feel these material possessions are truly connected to our peace, to our happiness, to our self-worth, when in fact We must seek happiness and self-worth and peace from within. And it has very little to do with how much money we have, how beautiful and shiny and new our car is, or how up-to-date our accommodation, our lodging, our apartment, our house is. So that's, it's a fact, you know. Aparigrapha is a concept, this is what it suggests, that we should not accumulate more than we need, that we should not buy things out of envy, out of comparison with other people who are more successful and have more things, that we should not be greedy and get more than what we need. Yoga itself is about balance and equanimity. If we have more than we need, there are a lot of people who cannot afford the things that they should be, that they should have access to, right? Those things are in our possession. So most likely, if we embrace the philosophy of equanimity and of balancing, the world tends to flatten out. Right. So if we have more than what we need and that what we use, most likely there are people out there suffering of lack, of scarcity. So that's also one thing to think about. Of course, we are so centered on our egos and on our own needs. While yoga advises us to perceive and acknowledge this balance, no? This equanimity.
I think there's the societal pressure as well, and right, like you know, your friend, your neighbor, your acquaintance got this and that and the other, and you should too, or all your friends have the latest whatever it is, and you should too. And it's either because it's a pressure or it's just like this conformity, right? Or just this wanting to relate to people, or, you know, acceptance maybe that you're seeking.
You know, to be like your neighbor, right? You have to be like your friend. You have to be to feel one with them and to be alike, yeah. No?
Yeah, so then you go and get all the things that other people got that you may not need or don't even want, or, you know, but it's what you should do, so to speak. And you don't necessarily stop and think, you know, about these things. I don't think overall as a society right now, especially in like the Western countries, let's say, I don't think in general people really stop and think before they buy something. Maybe some people do, of course. I'm not saying that's a blanket, you know, it's not doesn't apply for everyone, but I think the on average people don't, especially if like you have an okay lifestyle, which for the most part I would say happens in the West more, then you don't, right? It's not a big deal. You just accrue things, I guess.
You accrue things. Morte passioni. The death of your gifts, of your passion, of your will to live, and of your energy is comparing yourself to your peer, no? To other human beings that are like you. Because this is how we are so... we need to be not subpar, but live up to the expectation and to the challenge. You know, everybody is like this in a certain way, and then we must live up to it. But this is it, the consumerist culture in this day and age is quite tragic, I find. While yoga is all about balance, so you get some and you also give some. What you give must be held in the same hand as what you get. So I am really trying to be more on the downsizing side of things and the decluttering side of things. If I think of simple materialistic things such as a wardrobe, you know, obviously for women, for us women, shoes and clothes and all of that, they're quite important. No, we must have them in bigger quantities than men have, and we must be super polished and fresh at all times, right? Especially if we have a career and a job, and we must present ourselves very nicely. But then there's also this concept of giving away two things for every one new thing that you buy into this wardrobe. I'm not sure whether you've heard of this. I think it's really cool. So if I buy something, I must get rid of two old items.
Yeah, I heard of it slightly different. Like you get rid of one item, you buy another item. But I understand, because your point is that you actually get rid of more items than you buy. Mine is you keep it constant.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I think both men and women need to look presentable if they are in a career, in a job and stuff like that. But there is definitely more ways, so to speak, or more options for wardrobe for women than there are for men, I would say, in general, for a corporate, especially a corporate environment. So I guess from that perspective, you would end up with more things. But I think as a woman as well, you could, you know, comfortably leave off a few pairs of shoes and, you know, a few dresses and so on. You don't need to, you know, just because you're a woman, you don't need 20 plus pairs of shoes. I don't know, whatever the number is. I'm sure it can go even higher. I don't know.
For sure we need more than men do. Right.
Probably depending on what the men do, but also I guess just overall the options are way more for women, right, in terms of shoes as well, like, than for men. So I think from that perspective as well, you know, you have a lot of options and a lot of maybe different events that you could use different shoes versus men that will probably just use one type. Mostly, let's just say mostly, not completely, but yeah,
that's exactly how it is. I feel the same. So aparigrafa as a concept translates into enjoying the process rather than being focused on the fruits of our action. So we have this phrase in the Bhagavad Gita, which is one of the most important texts that the yoga practice and system refers to. So Krishna in Bhagavad Gita shares this very important lesson. So let your concern be with the action alone and never with the fruits of your action. Do not let the results of your action be your motive. Do not be attached by inaction. So I think here the meaning is that we speak about enjoying the process, no? And enjoying the process more than the fruits of our action. And I think this translates pretty smoothly into asana practice, you know, when we're on the yoga mat. Because if we approach the yoga practice with an attitude of enjoying the process and the practice itself more, then the peak pose, the result of all of this work, will come anyway because we're doing the work, right? But if we approach the practice with an attitude of detachment and of not wanting more than what is there in that very moment, not wanting more than we are capable of showcasing, of demonstrating, this is where the progress lies, and this is how we can get better. A more serene and detached attitude, focused on the practice itself and not on the peak pose, not on the results, not on the ultimate end goal. This really depends on the personality, I think. For some of us, it's about, I need to get into this handstand now, right? And others will accept that handstand achievement might be a few months practice, or some years of practice, or maybe it could not be attained at all, you know, ultimately. But working towards it is so much fun. And it brings us so much joy and so much energy. And simply the practice itself betters our days, I would say. That's why I love yoga, because of this whole process of how the body feels during the practice and afterwards. And not necessarily because I will be able to look super good, cool and great in that pose. That's how it is for me. I don't know. For some other characters, it might be different.
And I think we've also like and I think this is something worth reminding, but we've also alluded to, hey, focus on the journey, don't focus on the result. Also because you can't control the result. And yeah, I think this is something that you hear online a lot, and maybe at some point you're like, yeah, whatever, I focus on the journey, you know what I mean? It's so easy to say, and you've seen it everywhere, and it becomes this you know, maybe annoying thing. But it is so important, and I think so challenging. Like, if you actually really think about it, it's so simple, you know, just focus on the journey. But actually, when you try to do that, it becomes really challenging. And when you combine that with non-attaching yourself to anything, basically, to what might come out of it, to how it's going to look like, to all of that, that is a real challenge. I think in general, we are, or at least speaking from my perspective, we are sort of wired almost to attach and to have expectations and to want to control things, you know.
One of the ways that, one of the ways where aparigraha is easily and comprehensively manifested in a yoga practice is when focusing on our breath. So I think it's beautiful if we could focus on the inhales as representing what we get, what we internalize from the universe, no? The love we get, the energy, the good deeds, the inspiration that we get from the universe and from the present atmosphere that is there in the class, in the space that we're practicing in. But on the other hand, as I mentioned earlier, what you give must be held in the same hand as what you give. So the exhales must represent what we put out into the world. No, so it's not more than what we need. It's just right. The just right amount. That pinpoints this balance, this equilibrium, us being integrated in the world, us being one with the universe. Yeah, we give something to the world, but we also take something back. So the inhales and the exhales, I think, represent this perfectly. So it's a nice metaphor, but in fact, it's not only a metaphor, it's true, no? If you only think of the physical act of breathing in and breathing out,
it's pretty simple if you think about it, but also very complex. But I feel like almost every discussion kind of links into the breath, which just goes to show just how important that is. And I know yoga has like a, you know, it's an entire thing around the breath. It focuses a lot on the breath combined with the poses and combined with the spirituality as well. But it just makes you, the more you go into the yamas and yamas and the practice of yoga and other things, it just makes you understand even more how important the breath is and how much it can help you and how connected it is, so to speak, to, well, it's, you know, it's kind of connected to to life, so it's pretty important. But yeah,
of course, it's connected to everything, the breath itself. And if we are to think of aparigraha as non-possessiveness and non-clinging and non-attachment and not getting more than what you need, The fact that you are thinking of this, that you are aware of this, that you are practicing aparigraha, will have very serious consequences that are positive, right? So by practicing aparigraha, you will get to live a life free of anxieties, or fears that are pointless, no? Because when you let go of things that you don't need, you will be more in the moment. You will focus more on what's there at the present moment. You will be more present. You will release yourself of getting very, how to put it, clingy or needy. You will be a fully fledged human, mastering yourself, your inner being, functioning properly in a society, you know, with your partner, with your friends, at work. So you'll get more confidence, I think, and you'll be able to manage your present situations and your present challenges rather than worrying about the future, for instance. So the mind always worries about the future and regrets the past. But by not clinging on what we need as a surplus, that's super cool, right? We're just here with our bodies, our minds, our physicality, our feelings and emotions in this present moment. And we are one with the universe and with each other. So we don't need more. I think this is what aparigraha teaches us.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, it's, you know, to what you were saying earlier, we are really, again, I think we might have said this before, but I think it's quite a challenge to, you know, live in the present. Because to your point, the mind either goes to the past or to the future. So you're either like maybe regretting some things or you're anxious and worried and, you know, because I feel like on some level, all these feelings are, you know, you have all these feelings because you can't focus on the present, right? So that's why you're anxious. That's why maybe you're, you know, sad. And I'm not saying that's the only reason, but I am saying that probably contributes to it, because if you're really in the present, then, you know, you just take things as they are in that moment. So it's probably a less worrying, less sad time in general.
Yeah, definitely. This practice of being in the present moment solves so many of our fears and challenges and problems, and sets us out to be so, you know, smart. It helps us be better decision makers, be quicker, and be sharper. So this is what yoga teaches us through its many layers and through its yamas and niyamas. And I'm happy we got the chance to talk about all of them in our podcast episodes. And hopefully you guys have, you know, your own experience to share, or you've learned something out of it, or you have found our words to be relatable, because this is why we have the podcast in the first place, to connect with more people and to see how people relate to what we are experiencing as yogis.
Yeah, absolutely. But also adding to all of that, just getting more people, I think, just getting them into yoga or getting them to try it at least. And hopefully at least some of our episodes are working towards that. Well, if not all.
We're trying.
Yeah. And I've learned quite a bit of the yamas and niyamas with this series as well, because I think, you know, I knew of them and I knew some stuff, but not for sure, not in the details that we've been discussing and that you know, Monica. So that has been a good learning journey for me as well.
Thank you so much for being here and for being present. And thank you to all our viewers. And let's see how this podcast journey continues with other topics in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Monica, for teaching all of us. So, So I think that's it for today, guys. If you made it this far, thank you so much. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. And we'll see you next time with a new episode.
See you.
Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.